Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
In just a moment, we get to our feature story, but here's something I want each of you to do while I take a little break. Quick, grab your favorite bird field guide and see what it says about the ivory-billed woodpecker. With that, you'll be armed to really appreciate what you are about to hear. So while I talk, start walking to your bookshelf or backpack and look it up. Go on. I'll even bet some of you may not see it listed. See, it's supposed to be extinct. Wrong. We're off to Cornell's Laboratory of Ornithology when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The Catch River National Wildlife Refuge in Arkansas is a huge 500,000-acre tangle of trees and water, snakes, and bugs. It's a truly wild zone that sees a few hunters and adventurers each year, but it's primarily a wildlife sanctuary. That may be one of the reasons for the story that follows. For within those confines lived one of America's most legendary birds, the ivory-billed woodpecker. And what makes this story so amazing is that until this last year, it was pretty much considered extinct. Joining us now on the phone is Dr. John Fitzpatrick, who is the director of the legendary Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology located in Ithaca, New York. Dr. Fitzpatrick, welcome to the Wildside News.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, you have some extraordinary good news. In this era where there is so much challenging news coming from the environmental realms, this is an amazing story. Why don't you tell us the basic story, and then we'll kind of search it out a little bit.
Well, the headlines of the story are headlines that every bird lover for the last three generations has been dying to hear. Namely, the ivory-billed woodpecker is not extinct. We have discovered and proven the existence of at least one individual in the woods of eastern Arkansas.
But a lot of people who may not be familiar with this bird may kind of go, well, okay, great, there's another woodpecker out there that we thought didn't exist, but this is no ordinary bird.
That's exactly right. This bird is a bird of legend. It's a bird of huge mystery. It has been very rare for 150 years. It's been on the edge of or considered past extinction for all of the 20th century. It was rediscovered several times in the middle part of the 20th century, 1920, when already it was believed extinct, and then again in 1935. But after 1944, when the birds in Louisiana disappeared, until the present, there has never been a conclusively documented sighting of this bird. And it's also spectacular. It is a huge woodpecker, America's biggest. It was Audubon's, one of his favorite birds. He called it Van Dyke bird because of its extraordinary color and contrast with the big lightning bolts of white down an ebony back, black back and the scarlet-red crest. It's a bird that every bird lover for the last 50 years has grown to view with a huge degree of fantasy and mystery, wishing, hoping against hope that he could see it.
The bird is legendary because of its size. That's one of the reasons this sighting was so spectacular, because literally sighting this bird is an experience. Why don't you give people a sense of just how big this bird is?
It's the third largest woodpecker in the world. For any listener familiar with the pileated woodpecker, which is our a relatively familiar bird of North America, which is itself a massive woodpecker, as big or bigger than a crow. The ivory-billed woodpecker is 20% larger than a crow, than a pileated woodpecker in measurements, but 80% larger than a pileated woodpecker in weight. It's a truly massive woodpecker, and in fact, it used its size to get into the bark of big dying trees before other woodpeckers could get there. It was powerful enough with a big chisel-like bill to chip away the bark of dying trees before any other woodpecker was able to get that bark off, and therefore reach these big grubs of wood-boring beetles that were feeding on the dying inner bark before any other woodpecker could do that. So it had a special place in the big southern forests during the days when there were old dying trees.
I know for myself, I've been fortunate to see a number of pileated woodpeckers. We talked about Helmer Myrie State Park over in Wisconsin, and my first sighting was as if I was witnessing a dinosaur flying. I mean, this is a spectacular bird.
Right. The big woodpeckers, in fact, this is true all over the world, the big woodpeckers are always really exciting, thrilling birds to see. And even the pileated is a thrilling bird to see still. It does have a sort of a reptilian look. They're somewhat long-necked and the big long bill and a kind of a wild-looking eye. And, of course, these great red crests that are true of many of the larger woodpeckers. And because they're so big and often they have black and white patterns, they just have a very magical look as they fly or as they're working away on some dead trees.
Well, now the story of this particular revival of this bird is an amazing story all by itself. This is just a current story of which legends will be long-lived. The rediscovery of this bird, give us some of that history.
It happened on the day before Abe Lincoln's birthday, 2004, February 11th, when a very good woodsman from Hot Springs, Arkansas, by the name of Gene Sparling, kayaking through the bayou in the Cache River, White River area, pausing for a moment just to take in the sights and sounds of the woods, had a woodpecker fly towards him and land just 20 meters from him on the butt of a tree and look at him and hitch back and forth a little bit. And he, very familiar with the woods, realized that this was what he refers to as a pileated on steroids. It was a very large woodpecker, quite unlike a pileated in that it had a long, thin neck, a very thin, tapered crest that was not the bright red and bushy crest of a pileated, but it had a black forepart to the crest. And most importantly, he saw the big white area on the lower wings, covering the whole lower back as the bird perched. He knew enough about the woods and had seen dozens, hundreds of pileateds throughout his life that he knew this was not the more common big woodpecker, but indeed that it looked a lot to him like an ivory-billed woodpecker. He posted an obscure reference to this event without mentioning the bird's name on a canoeing website, and that came to the attention of Tim Gallagher, who is the editor of our great bird magazine called Living Bird. And Tim talked to Gene, thought it sounded credible enough. He was flabbergasted by how good Gene's details were, and so he met Gene out there with Tim's friend Bobby Harrison. The two of them were guided by Gene through the bayou, and on their second day, very close to where Gene first spotted the bird, darned if they didn't have the incredible good luck of this bird flying right in front of them, just 20 meters away, and they got a great look of the bird flanking in the sun, and they both actually shouted and pointed at it, yelling ivory-billed at the same time, and actually they think scared it away from what it might have done, which was to land on a tree. So they had seen this bird. In fact, Bobby Harrison knelt down and wept a minute or two afterwards on the when they came to land, and Tim came back to the lab of ornithology, and a couple of days later met me and told me the story. And we just, when I asked him the question, "Tim, what are the chances this was not an ivory bill?" He said, "Zero, Fitz. It was purely an ivory bill." That was in March of 2004, and we've been working on it ever since.
So now you've heard that there is an ivory-billed woodpecker. What was your reaction?
Well, I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned. When Tim first told me this story, first of all, I should mention that he looked terrible. He had gone without sleep for a few days. I thought he was going to tell me that he had a bad disease, literally. he just was very tense and nervous and excited. And when he told me first, I said, "Just wait, Tim. I gotta stop you." I ran and got a tape recorder. I turned it on, and I just said, "Start from the beginning. Just tell me the whole thing again." And I grilled him, and when he convinced me that he was absolutely positive, 100% positive of the identification, I just said, "Well, we gotta start working on this." I mean, I thought this is the dream come true. We've fantasized about this in other times. We were involved in a big search in Louisiana several years ago. During that time, we'd fantasized about what to do if we actually encountered one.
But you probably never really thought you really would.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, a bird that is probably extinct, although you're hoping for the best, the hopes had been fading. And you're right. There is this thing in the back of your mind saying, I'm chasing a ghost here. What am I doing? So when this news came for us, we thought, well, okay, this is right down our bread and butter as far as the lab of ornithology, the kind of thing that we do, try to get in and get a major piece of research done, working at the same time with conservation organizations. So immediately we contacted the Nature Conservancy in Arkansas, and it turns out they had already heard this news quietly. So we began a partnership between the two of us, the two organizations, that included all of the other people that had heard the news, and we agreed we needed to keep very carefully controlled the number of people who knew while we got research going, while we raised some money to pay for some research and to pay for some significant land conservation, and also to begin working with the agencies to think about the management of the habitat and to get prepared for potential management of a major attraction of people, bird watchers and sightseers who might come in for this reason. So we decided to keep it secret, and we succeeded actually in keeping it secret for 14 months while we got an enormous amount of work accomplished, including the big event, which was David Luno's historic recording of a video clip of this bird on April 25th of 2004.
So then began a very challenging process of really confirming this. I mean, you have to now verify this from a number of perspectives and with expertise. What was involved with that?
Well, that's exactly right, that a few really, really high-quality sight records are exciting, but they're not sufficient for a bird of this degree of rarity to constitute proof of its existence. And in our view, everybody's view, the key element for proof was to get a photograph or a video. That became the obsessive quest over the remainder of the spring of 2004, culminating in David Luno's video of the 25th of April, which was not a great video, but it was it's a hallmark of David Luno that he had wisely recognized that all the sightings to date were so quick that he needed to have the camera rolling all the time, and in addition, he needed to have some good luck. Well, he got both of those. He had the video running one afternoon, and they flushed a bird out from right in front of them, and it flew in exactly the right direction to be captured for a total of 4 seconds on his video screen. That was enough to prove to us ornithologists that the bird existed. But frankly, the video, which is visible on the website, ivorybill.org, you'll see the video is not that great. It's pretty blurry. It's only a teeny little portion of the lower left corner of the frame. But it's sufficient, it turns out, after a careful study, to prove the identity of the bird. And that was the important thing. The end of the spring of 2004 came without any additional evidence. We tried putting some sound recording units out in the woods and got a few tantalizing sounds, but what we knew we had to do was gear up for a major session during the 2005 breeding season, winter and spring, when the leaves are dropped again and when we could have a chance with a lot of people spread over a big area to get some more information about this focal bird or birds. The key was to have people scouring a few of the best possible areas. Number one, the region broadly around the place where the birds were first seen. And number two, more broadly across the White River National Wildlife Refuge, with hopes that we could document the existence of other birds and thereby begin to understand how many birds might live in this area.
Now, how many people were involved in that, and then how many sightings did you actually encounter?
We've had, in our peak time, we had 20 people down there full-time in these two different areas, and a few extra volunteers working for 1 or 2 weeks at a time. And we did it from December 1st until May 1st. We ended up accumulating about 15 total sightings that were possible, of which 7 we concluded to be filled with enough detail and a long enough sighting, many of them through binoculars, that we could consider definitive. So we really published the article with a total of 7 positive encounters, with some others that were possible. And we also we put in a lot of acoustic listening devices across the forest and got some very tantalizing sounds, particularly the double knock display raps that these birds make, characteristic of the ivory-billed woodpecker. We aren't yet completely positive that those constitute the woodpecker, although the circumstantial evidence is very strong that they do.
So now what? There is one ivory-billed woodpecker. If you were in charge of this, what would you do? When we return, we find out what the plans are now that this elusive animal has come back to life. The story continues on Your Voice of the Earth, here on the Wild Side News.